Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay, got quieted down pretty much. Our senior citizens row back there, huh? Me too. I'm going for an MRI tomorrow because my knee doesn't bend properly. Just started up, flared up. I don't know what it is. But I feel empathy for your senior citizen condition. I can relate to it. So, anybody here that needs an introduction to who is Prahlad Maharaj? That's probably a good place to start. Everyone knows who is Prahlad Maharaj. Yes? I'm looking at a young man in the back row back there. You know who is Prahlad Maharaj?
Not entirely.
Not entirely. Okay. We spent some time Monday at the Farmington Hills Center discussing the life of Prahlad and the relevance of the person speaking and the person being spoken to, or the Prahlad offering prayers and Lord Nrsingadev who was offering his prayers too. So a little background especially for that purpose. Prahlad Maharaj, we discussed Monday, it's described that it's a very large section goes from chapter 5 to chapter 10 of Canto 7. Like, that's a big chunk. And because he's a very important personality in the whole of the Srimad Bhagavatam. In chapter 10, in one of the prayers to Lord Nrsingadev, Prahlad says, because people in this world are so much influenced by ignorance and passion, you sent me here, meaning from the spiritual world, Lord Vishnu sent him here to teach the way of pure devotional service, how to become free from material existence. And material existence is influenced by the modes of nature. We're under the grip of the modes of nature. And once under the grip of the modes of nature, however clever, however pious, however anything you may be, you can't get out of the grip of the modes of material nature. Except for one thing. What's that one thing? Dissolve the influence of guna and karma. And the reposing place of guna and karma, well, specifically guna, it's the mind. So bhakti has the power to dissolve, like an Alka-Seltzer commercial, it has the power to dissolve the material mind and false ego. And nothing else has that power. He came... He came to teach the mood and the way of achieving that goal of life for everybody. And we're part of everybody. It's a very important part of the Bhagavatam. So by his example, Prahlad taught, by his teachings, and by his prayers he taught, by his achar and his prachar, both he taught. So the teachings section, he's got a wide range. He was teaching his friends, and they were looking up to him like, you know, he's a leader. And they're kids that they also have leaders amongst them. And they saw him as their leader. And he was teaching them something they never heard before. Pure devotional service. Two chapters of speaking to his friends. Then he spoke to his teachers. The sons of Shukracharya were in charge of the Asura Kula. We know the term Guru Kula. They were part of an Asura Kula. They were learning how to become Asuras. And they had never heard anything about bhakti. They really liked it. They liked it too much, so much so that when Sundamarka saw them singing and dancing, the holy names of Vishnu and Krishna, curtains closed and Prahlad was in big trouble. So he spoke to his teachers and he spoke to his father. He gave the same teachings appropriate for the different audiences that he was speaking to. But the teachings were the same. So a lot is revealed about the way of pure devotional service and how to introduce fearlessly the message of pure devotional service to different constituents. But then in his prayers, this is a section, as you see, that's what we'll be discussing. His prayers are to Lord Vishnu. Now, Lord Vishnu accepted a very interesting form. We heard on Monday evening, a form that the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, had never seen before, the acharyas explained. She actually had seen that form before. But by influence of the Lord's Leela Shakti, she had forgotten that she had seen that form before, and she was astonished and fearful, like the demigods were also fearful of that form, because Advuta Rasa, it's one of the secondary rasas. There are five primary rasas: neutrality, servitorship, friendship, parental affection, conjugal love. Five primary rasas. And there's seven secondary rasas. Adbhuta rasa is one of them. And she was experiencing Adbhuta rasa. The purpose of secondary rasas, this is Rupa Goswami's teaching in Nectar Devotion, if you read carefully, you'll find secondary rasas do two things. One, temporarily, like a tsunami covers land that normally is not covered by the ocean, the primary rasa becomes covered. And the secondary rasa takes over. The second thing that secondary rasas do, because there's variety in the spiritual world, it strengthens the unseen primary rasa, because the primary rasa for the goddess of fortune is, she's the goddess of fortune. She's the consort of the Supreme Lord. So it's strengthened by this mood of astonishment, secondary rasa. And how did that happen? The influence of the Lord's Lila Shakti. The whole event, the whole sequence of things happening here is all a Lila of the personality of Godhead. And Lilas are moved by Lila Shakti. It's all internal potency happening. And she's getting a taste, Goddess of Fortune, is getting a taste of a mood of love that isn't the normal mood of love. It's Lord Nrisimhadev has his abode in Vaikuntha. All of the avatars have their abode in Vaikuntha, and avatar means one who descends. So that form of Lord Nrisimhadev exists in Vaikuntha, and that form of Lord Nrisimhadev descended. The form of Ram has his position in Vaikuntha, the planet known as Ayodhya, and he descended in his form and displayed pastimes. Everything that was displayed in his pastimes, except for Ravana and the demons, and Subahu and Marichi and all those, you know, the demons, they don't exist in the spiritual world, but the associates of the Lord do exist. And so she had seen that form, but she had forgotten. And because the demigods, the whole previous chapter, we'll be discussing chapter 9. Prayers are starting in chapter 9. Chapter 8 is when the Lord appears. He finishes Hiranyakashipu, and then the demigods come forward to pacify him because he's roaring, he's so angry. What happened to Prahlad? Nothing works. So Brahma approaches Prahlad and says, he appeared to protect you. Can you go forward and pacify him? So he under their order, he does. These are the beginning verses that we covered on Monday. He prostrated himself before Lord Nrisimhadev. Lord Nrisimhadev picked him up with his hands, placed his hand upon his head, or his paw, upon his head, and the body of Prahlad just erupted in ecstasy. Tears, trembling, with his eyes in samadhi, fixed upon the eyes of Lord Nrisimhadev. Very eloquent prayers are going to begin, with starting with text number 8. So, let's see. There we go. There's Lord Nrisimhadev in Mayapur. Have any of you been to Mayapur? How many of you have been to Mayapur? Oh, good. Good. When you go, you'll see this deity of Lord Nrisimhadev, not so close like this. And one of the things you don't want to do is disturb Prahlad, because you're in trouble. And he'll show his teeth and nails and roar. And so that the deity is in his stage just before pouncing on Hiranyakashipu. There's a particular name for that form, of the deity form of Lord Nrisimhadev, and that's his form. So, there's Prahlad going up the steps. There's some dismembered body parts of different demons on the steps. Over here is Lord Brahma and other demigods And Prahlad is going before Lord Nrsingadeva to offer some prayers. Now, I put in some color code, Ugra Jate, that form, Ugra Nrsinga, Ugra means, terrible. So, Ugra Jate, he's saying, Prahlad is saying that he came from an Ugra birth. He's born the son of a universal terrorist. Very, very powerful personality. Not just in the Middle East. He terrorized the universe very effectively. And he's saying that the Suragana, the demigods, they spoke with sattva, I can't read because it's... Okay. My computer is over there. I'm used to having it in front of me. So the words of the demigods were very elevated, in the mode of goodness prayers. And look, I didn't even go to school yet. And I'm from an Asura family, and I have no qualification. The first expression of one who is really qualified is an expression of humility, naturally so, before Lord Nrsingadeva, his worshipable Lord. How is it possible for me, who have been born in a family of Asuras, to offer suitable prayers to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even until now, all the demigods, headed by Lord Brahma, and all the saintly persons could not satisfy the Lord by streams of excellent words. Although such persons are very qualified, being in the mode of goodness, then what can be said of me? I am not at all qualified. And that's part of his qualification. Now, something that we heard Monday is in Prahlad's life and teachings, there's an important lesson. No material qualification is needed to become dear to the Supreme Lord. It's repeated about 20 times. There's no prerequisite for material qualification to become intimately associated with the Supreme Lord. In fact, in Queen Kunti's prayers, she says, further, Janma, Aishwarya, Shruta, Shri, Edamanama Dakpuman. The fruits of piety commonly are in these four categories: good birth, opulence, good education, and beauty. The absence of those is... There's other indicators, but the absence of those is not good karma. The presence of those is good karma. Good karma produces fruits of good karma. Good piety produces fruits of piety. But if somebody has those fruits of piety, but their heart isn't pure yet, they can't approach the Supreme Lord feelingly. But Prahlad's heart is pure. So he's citing the good qualifications of the demigods, the opposite of those good qualifications in him. So I have no qualification, material qualification. He has abundant spiritual qualification, but he's lacking in the so-called qualifications or material qualifications. Not needed. If they're there, they can be used in Krishna's service. Unfortunately, in many cases, too often, people that have piety, they become intoxicated with their piety. They become proud. And when you're proud, when you're prideful, you can't feelingly do much of anything except try to take advantage of other people. Feel justified because you're proud. It's bad. Narada teaches that. A really nice example is the two sons of Kuvera, Nalakuvera and Manigriva, when Narada went to visit Lord Shiva. There they were, naked and shameless and proud of their position as the sons of the treasure of heaven. Wow, we got lots of wealth. Somehow treasurers have some wealth. And Kuvera was very dear to Lord Shiva. So we're very dear to one who's very dear to Lord Shiva. They were proud. Because of that pride, they were shameless. It happens. So Narada considered what to do to help these men become free from pride. Take away all their opulence. Let them be in a condition of hardship. And then they'll not be hurtful to others. He gives the example. One who has stepped on thorns feels vicariously the pain of others who are stepping on thorns. So they can step on thorns for a while. They can be in a condition of life. They don't have those fruits of piety for a long time. And they have to stand as trees. They want to stand naked, stand as trees. Trees stand naked, become trees. But in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj, and Krishna will deliver them after some time. So, fruits of piety are not necessarily a qualification for approaching the Supreme Lord feelingly. Not having them is not a disqualification for approaching the Supreme Lord feelingly. In one sense, it's an asset, spiritual asset. A Vaishnava who is fully qualified to serve the Lord still thinks himself extremely low while offering prayers to the Lord. This is now messages taken from Prabhupada's purports. For example, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, author of Chaitanya Charitamrita. Any of you not familiar with what that is? Okay, you all know what that is. Chaitanya Charitamrita, the life of Lord Chaitanya. The author writes, he considered himself unqualified, lower than the worms in stool, and more sinful than Jagai and Madhai. Though the phrase is his verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Prabhupada is explaining what Krishnadas is saying about himself is, I'm being asked to compose a literature that's describing the life of Lord Chaitanya? How is it possible? I'm lowly, I'm lower than a worm in stool. It's not like a cute expression. He's feeling himself very lowly. And how to compare yourself, not just a worm, but a worm in stool. And so it's not cosmetic, it's how a great soul feels. And Prahlad is a great soul, and Prahlad also feels. It's the character and the way of pure devotional service. Now, while he's feeling that way about himself, he goes forward anyway. And he goes forward anyway because his superiors, the demigods, have asked him to do something. And so he's doing it as a service in submission to his superiors, although he has no qualification. How am I going to do this service? Maybe sometimes we've been asked to do some service that we're not sure we're so qualified to do, and how are we going to do this? It really takes a qualified person to do it, but we're being asked to do it. I don't know. Organize a Rath Yatra or something. Be in charge of the Janmashtami celebration or something. Or give the Bhagavatam class or something. We feel like, where's the older devotees around here? They should do all these things. I'm just a new guy, a new lady. I'm not qualified. The Hare Krishna movement started with people that weren't qualified. And, some had enough horse sense to know they really weren't qualified. But Prabhupada gave his disciples some important services to do. On the confidence that Prabhupada would somehow make them eligible to do that service, just be on his order, they could do that service. Maybe some of you have seen the documentary text, Your Ever Well Wisher, and one of the persons interviewed is a professor, philosophy professor, and he said, I met these devotees, professor in Butler, Pennsylvania, not Butler, Pennsylvania, professor from somewhere in Pennsylvania. A friend of the Hare Krishna movement for years and years. So he's referring to Satsrup Maharaj because he was connecting with him. So Satsrup Maharaj informed him, in this interview doesn't give him by name, but Prabhupada asked him to start the Back to Godhead magazine. And he asked him, did you know anything about a Back to Godhead magazine beyond reading one? He said, no. So it's complicated. But he was all completely confident. And the professor said, I was puzzled how these young people can feel they can do Mission Impossible or they have no qualification. And then I went to New York City and I met the Swamiji, and then I can understand, they have confidence in their spiritual master. And by the grace of their spiritual master, they can do anything. Like it says in Chaitanya Charitamrita, a lame man can climb a mountain. I've got a problem with my knee and I'm having trouble going up the stairs, which to speak will climb a mountain. I'm not exactly lame, but a lame man can climb a mountain. A blind man can see the stars in the sky. A fool can understand the conclusions of the Vedas by mercy. And if you have your mercy vessel open, that's the heart, and you're receiving from qualified source, that's Prabhupada, and in this case, the Bhagavatam's speaker, Srimad Bhagavatam, Prahlad Maharaj, then that heart vessel can become filled. We can understand at least, wow, how exalted is Prahlad. He is feeling himself unqualified while he's the most qualified. He's more qualified than the demigods. And how qualified are the demigods? Not just residents of heaven, the demigods of heaven. He's more qualified than they are. And he's feeling himself unqualified. So what should we feel about ourselves? One of the commentators of the Bhagavatam is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He explains like this, paraphrasing Prahlad, venerable Lord, it is hard to understand what quality you see in me that brought about such mercy. One possessing sattva is not the cause of your mercy. That's the demigods. What then to speak of a person possessing tamas? The devatas and sages' minds are completely immersed in sattvic dharma, jnana, and austerity. I am immersed in adharma, ajnana, and material enjoyment. In the Sanskrit, it's ekatana, means exclusive tendency. And simply praising you is not a cause of your mercy. They praised you with streams of words which are fresh, cool, sweet, and pure like water, and which were embellished with ornaments and literary suggestions. But they were not able to make you satisfied with them. You are satisfied with me, though I am born in a family possessing great tamas. That's that ugra jate. What he's getting at is, because of his association with Narada, he has some bhakti, and because he has some bhakti, that's what the Lord is pleased by. That is material disqualification. Next verse. So there's bhaktya tu tosha bhagavan. Bhagavan is satisfied with bhakti. One may possess wealth, an aristocratic family, beauty, austerity, education, sensory expertise, luster, influence, physical strength, diligence, intelligence, mystic, yogic power. But I think that even by all these qualifications, one cannot satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. However, one can satisfy the Lord simply by devotional service. Gajendra did this, and thus the Lord was satisfied with him. Now, Gajendra, some of you, most of you know Gajendra. He was a king, King Indradumna, who, by some arrangement, offended a sage, and the sage cursed him, you become an elephant. So he became an elephant. But not just an elephant, he was the king of elephants. So one day, along with the other elephants, they went bathing in a lake with lotus flowers and this and that beautiful scene. And he was the last one out of the lake after bathing, and a crocodile came and chomped on his leg. And so he was fighting for his life. And according to the Bhagavatam's narration, and on for a long time, day and night and day for a long time. And after some time, the crocodile, because he was in his natural element, the water, he was fine. Gajendra was getting, his energy was down and down, and he knew, uh-oh, that's it. I'm finished. Fortunately, because of the presence of Super Soul within his heart, he remembered some prayers that he had practiced in his previous life, Gajendra Stotra, or Indradumna, King Indradumna Stotra, his prayers. And so Super Soul reminded him of those prayers, and he started reciting those prayers. And as he was reciting those prayers, Lord Vishnu heard those prayers. And he came on the back of Garuda. And when Gajendra saw Lord Vishnu on the back of Garuda, he wanted to offer him something, and he was a little restricted with the alligator chomping on his leg. So with his trunk, he picked a lotus flower, and offered a lotus flower to Lord Vishnu. He was protected by Lord Vishnu even though he was in the body of an animal. So Prahlad is making reference to that. I'm in the body of a demoniac family, born into a family of asuras. I don't have any qualification. But with devotion, I can please you and attract you, as Gajendra did. The picture on the upper left, that's at the head of Krishna had decided, he informed Duryodhana and Arjuna, I shall not fight because you're both my cousins, so I can't be on one side or the other side. But here's what I'll do. One of you, Duryodhana, you can take your pick first. You can take my armies, or you can take me. But if you take me, I'm not going to fight. And Arjuna, you do whatever's left. But if he takes the armies, then I'm not going to fight. And Duryodhana wanted the armies. And Arjuna wanted Krishna. So Arjuna's at Krishna's feet. And Duryodhana's at Krishna's arms and head. Because he did, you know, the material calculation was real easy for him. More soldiers, powerful warriors. I'll take that. And Krishna's on the other side, he's not going to fight, no problem. So Krishna reciprocates with those that have devotion, whether they have a big army or not, whether they have a high birth or not. This is an example when Krishna came with his peace mission. The battle between the two cousin brothers was escalating. And Krishna volunteered, let me try to make peace. And it was accepted. So he went to Hastinapur from Indraprastha. He came with a whole entourage. And in a very calculating way, Duryodhana made a royal reception for Krishna. You know, flowers decorating the sides of the road, half-cut banana trees making arches as he approached, and the roads decorated with rose water and petals and so forth and so on. Brahmanas reciting prayers. It was a festival, a grand royal reception. And as Krishna came to the main gate of Hastinapur, Duryodhana left his palace and came to the gate to meet Krishna. And this is Mahabharata. And he offered nice prayers. Oh, Krishna, this and that and the other thing. You're so kind of you to come. You're gracing our city. Kindly accept an invitation to have a meal at my home. And Krishna said, one eats when either there's hunger or there's love. And I'm not really hungry. And in your case, there's absolutely no love. He said, I love you. He said, there's no love. Because of your enmity towards Arjuna and the Pandavas, there's no love. So, in fact, there's no home in the entire city of Hastinapur that's an appropriate place for me to take my meal except one place, the home of Vidura. See you later, Duryodhana, I'm going to the home of Vidura. And so he went to the home of Vidura, and Vidura's wife, she was so happy. She was beside herself with joy. And so there's different versions of Mahabharata But one of them was, she was so excited, instead of giving Krishna banana, she gave Krishna the banana peel. And Krishna ate the banana peel. Because it was offered with love. He doesn't want some, you know, gorgeous, fantastic something or other offered where there's no love. Krishna wants, Lord Vishnu wants, the personality Godhead wants, our love. And so he was ready to accept what Prahlad had to offer, even though it wasn't eloquent like the demigods, because it was offered with a love that even the demigods didn't have. He is a very special personality. Okay, there we go. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on this prayer of Prahlad in this way. You are not pleased by offerings of great wealth or other things. You are pleased. You are not pleased with birth in a good family, strength of the senses, splendor, power, exertion, or karma, gyan, and ashtanga yoga. Ha! How can I satisfy you? By bhakti the Lord was satisfied. The past tense used to indicate that one need not search out any further proof. This is your nature. Also, the extraordinary power of bhakti is indicated. I have a trace of bhakti by the mercy of Narada, and this must please you. So indirectly he's attributing his qualification to the one who gave him the qualification. He's not taking credit for bhakti, he's giving the credit where credit is due to Narada Muni. Next prayer. If a Brahmana has all 12 of the Brahminical qualifications, identified what they are, but is not a devotee and is averse to the lotus feet of the Lord, he is certainly lower than a devotee who is a dog eater, but who has dedicated everything, mind, words, activities, wealth, and life. There it is in big red letters up there in the Sanskrit. To the Supreme Lord. Such a devotee is better than such a brahmana because the devotee can purify his whole family, whereas the so-called brahmana, in a position of false prestige, cannot purify even himself. There are a number of such verses in the Bhagavatam that are cited by our acharyas regularly. And it's a companion idea of there's no material prerequisite for beginning bhakti and becoming dear to the Lord. But the flip side is, even if you have the material qualifications but you don't have devotion to the Supreme Lord, you can't, in the absolute sense, purify. You can, by highly pious qualifications, you can elevate in the mode of goodness and be endowed with the fruits of the mode of goodness, but that's not purity. Same message as Queen Kunti's message. The fruits of piety in the heart of someone who's not yet purified, they can't feelingly call out. There's pride. So how do you get purity? Purity is more important than piety. That's Prahlad's teachings. Piety is fine. Purity is better than fine. Don't be impious. There's a nice verse in Bhagavad Gita. Yesham tantikatam papam jananam punyakarmanam te dvandva moha nirmukta bhajante mam dridha vrata. To engage in dridha vrata, devotional service with great determination, one has to go beyond the sinful activities and have engaged in pious activities. But that can be created by devotional service. Look at what Prabhupada did. And his audiences, you know, the Lower East Side hippies. And in San Francisco, Golden Gate Park, look at the photographs. These are people that were, they're not free from sinful activities and simply engaged in pious activities. Prabhupada would speak like that openly. Previously, they were way over there. And now they're way over here. How did it happen? Bhakti. It transported them from way over there to way over. So the qualifications came to them because of bhakti. So supposing you have the material qualifications but no bhakti, there's not purity. Not the same. Piety is not the same as purity. Piety is piety. It's good. Better than good is the purity that comes from making the heart completely clean. And that's what Prahlad does by his teachings and by his example. Pure. Sridhar Swami, pictured here at the bottom, says that these qualities without bhakti produce only pride. That's what I've been saying. Here's another way of saying it. This is not, you know, a chapter and verse from the scripture. The fruits of piety, this is a math equation. The fruits of piety plus a heart that's impure equals pride. Fruits of piety plus a heart that's impure equals pride. And as the saying goes, pride goeth before the fall. So be pious, but more than pious, make your heart pure so you become free from pride. Because if your heart isn't pure, you're going to become proud. When you become proud, pride destroys everything good. It turns it upside down. And you use that fruits of the piety in a prideful mood and do hurtful things. It's called America. There's Queen Kunti's prayers, that Janmaisharya Shutra Shri Bir. So, that's the end of the section. Should I stop there or should we go a couple more? It's now 8:05. I'm going to do a couple more. Okay, text 11. From his prayers. The Supreme Lord, the Supreme Personality Godhead, is always fully satisfied in Himself. Nija labha purno. Nija labha purno. He's always satisfied within Himself. That's a teaching. Prahlad is teaching through his prayer. He's always satisfied within Himself. Therefore, when something is offered to Him, the offering, by the Lord's mercy, is for the benefit of the devotee. For the Lord does not need service from anyone. That's what the second line says. To give an example, if one's face is decorated, the reflection of one's face in a mirror is also seen to be decorated. Here's an example. Here's a nice lady. She's decorating herself. And by decorating herself, the image in the mirror is being decorated. It's like when we put on tilak. You're seeing the image in the mirror. You're not seeing your face because how can you see your face? But you can see the image in the mirror. And as your face is being, the image in the mirror is being decorated, your face is being decorated. Prabhupada gave this example with deity worship. When decorating the deity, the person who is decorating the deity is becoming decorated. Because it's not just the decoration, it's the love and devotion with which the decorations are being offered. That person is being benefited. The Supreme Lord doesn't need your decorations. He's full. We become decorated by making that gesture of offering to him. Let's see here. There we go. This is Prabhupada's words from the purport. This service of glorifying the Lord by hearing, chanting, and so on is not, of course, meant for the benefit of the Lord. This devotional service is recommended for the benefit of the devotee. Shukadeva Goswami was speaking Srimad Bhagavatam for the benefit of Maharaj Parikshit, and he achieved perfection also just by speaking Srimad Bhagavatam for the benefit of Maharaj Parikshit, because the glorification was the personality of Godhead was being glorified and his devotees. And everyone who was hearing, not just Maharaj Parikshit, everyone received great spiritual benefit. There's this teaching from the Christian realm. Man is created in the image of God. There's this other fancy word called anthropomorphism. Anthropomorphism means we imagine God to be like us. We look like this, and so God looks like this, looks like us. We imagine God that way. But it's the other way around. We're reflection. Man is created in the image of God. God has a certain image, and therefore we have an image. When Krishna is decorated, the devotees and all living entities are decorated automatically. Here's a nice teaching that Prabhupada gave us. That when somebody, our Sankirtan devotee meets some person in the public, and they give somebody a book, and the person very happy to receive the book, and they give a donation, and the Sankirtan devotee gives the donation to the temple uses the money for worship of the deity, the Brahmana that does the worship of the deity and the person that gave the donation that makes the worship of the deity possible, both receive equal benefit. Not only the Brahmana is in a special qualification. They're, to some degree at least, purified. That's why they can approach the deity. And the person that's out there that gave the donation that's used to worship the deity, they don't have the material qualification. But spiritually, they're benefited equally. And when the deity is being worshipped nicely, the whole community benefits. And that, the opposite is also true. If the offenses are made in the deity worship, the whole community suffers. So we have to have really qualified pujaris to take care of deities. Or if you have deities in your home, some have deities in their home, worship them nicely, then your whole family and others will also benefit just because you're worshiping nicely. Next. Therefore, that means this is a concluding verse. Although I was born in a demoniac family, I may, without a doubt, offer prayers to the Lord with full endeavor, as far as my intelligence allows. Anyone who has been forced by ignorance to enter the material world may be purified of material life if he offer prayers to the Lord and hears the Lord's glories. I'm unqualified, but I can become qualified by hearing from Narada. And then hearing from Narada, I can speak those words that I heard from Narada. And I can become further purified. That's our process, hearing and chanting. Hearing and chanting. And we go along the process of sincerely hearing from the right source and chanting in a way, it's not parrot-like, but where we want to glorify the personality of Godhead, we can become purified. None of one's material qualifications, high family, being rich, aristocratic, very beautiful, will engage one in devotional service. With devotion, we should feel, Prabhupada's purport, God is great, and I am very small, therefore my duty is to offer my prayers to the Lord. On this basis can one understand and render service to the Lord. There's the Gundicha margin of pastime illustrated in the painting, and all the devotees following Lord Chaitanya's example went into the only used during that particular time of the year, the Gundicha temple. They cleansed the temple, and by cleansing the temple, they were cleansing their hearts. That's the teaching. And it's true. You do a service like that, you're not only cleaning the pots in the kitchen or the whatever it is that you're doing, keeping your living space clean. If the consciousness is, this is to be used for Krishna's service, you're cleansing your heart. It's an important teaching that Prabhupada gave, and I have personal experience. The little introduction that was made, I was when I first started practicing Krishna consciousness, I met Prabhupada when I was a pre-med student. I took a little time out from pre-med school, and it's been a long 48 years time out. But one of the first things I did was I went to, because I had gone to look for med school possibilities in Boston. When I was there, I really liked the temple. So part of my time out was I wanted to live in the ashram for a while. And when I got to the temple, they engaged me in washing pots. And I was thinking, don't they know who I am? I can do so many things. And I wasn't like complaining. That was my mind, my pride. But you know, they needed a pot washer. So I became the pot washer. I was instructed. Prabhupada said, when you clean the pots, you're cleaning your heart. And my smart aleck college brain was saying, oh yeah, then why don't you stand next to me and help me? I didn't say it. But that was my thought. And then every day, I was there because, you know, there was the morning offering and breakfast. And then they had to make the Raj Bhoga offering. So I was there as all the brahmacharis went pouring out the door, patting me on the back, saying, you're doing such a good job. And they went off on Sankirtan, you know, Harinam, and, you know, big party. And then somebody said, you know, Prabhupada said that you should clean the pot so carefully that you could see your reflection in the pot. And in those days, we didn't have money. So they had used pots. And the used pots were bumpy on the bottom, you know, the cooking part, and they're black. So finally, I just decided, let me just surrender to Krishna. Let me take up this mood of as I'm cleaning the pots, I'm cleaning my heart. And I felt it. And then make the pot so clean you can see your reflection. It took a month, because these were old pots. But finding the day that the last pot you could see your reflection, not in the part where you put the food, but the part where the flame goes, you could see your reflection in the pot. Somebody tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Hey, we got somebody else that can wash the pots. Come on out in Sankirtan." And that the realization was, it's not that Krishna wanted me to wash pots. Krishna wanted me to give up my pride and instead take the motivation that Krishna should be pleased. Very important lesson. If you can learn that lesson any way at all, washing pots or standing on your head or anything at all, do it. Because that will carry you throughout your life. Because life has bumps. There are difficult circumstances that we meet. We make a plan that's, you know, we'll go from point A to point B and it's straight, and then there's the finish line. It doesn't work like that. There's obstacles, there's calamities, there's highs and there's lows, and all kinds of things. Just like the road coming into this place, there's so many potholes in this road. More potholes than this road. We didn't plan it that way, but that's what we found. So, life has its circumstances like that. But the mood should be that Krishna should be pleased. And let me accept whatever the circumstance that Krishna sends my way in the mood that Krishna should be pleased. Because that's what Krishna wants. Not your qualification to do high-level stuff. If you can do that, that's fine. But that's not what's pleasing to him. And, you know, I'll end with this. A classic is Hanuman and the Squirrel. Of course, there's different versions of Ramayana, but Hanuman wanted the squirrel to get out of the way. You know, we got important work to do. And Ram checked him. No. The squirrel is doing to his capacity, you're doing to your capacity. To me, both of you are equal. So whatever your capacity is, you do that. Don't compare yourself to other people. Oh, I don't have the capacity other people have. You have whatever capacity you have. And you do that. And you do that with sincerity, and you offer it to Krishna, and Krishna is pleased. That's our life. That's Prahlad. I don't have the qualification, but the good news is you're very merciful. And even I don't have qualification, because you're merciful, you'll accept. Bhaktyamam abhijanati. This verse from Bhagavad Gita. One can understand Krishna only through the medium of devotional service. And that's quoted in this purport of text 12 of chapter 9. Children are restless. Maybe it's time to end. I think that covers that section. It starts another section. I'll read it. Oh my Lord, all the demigods headed by Lord Brahma are sincere servants of your Lordship who are situated in a transcendental position. Therefore, they are not like us, Prahlad and his father. Your appearance in this fearsome form is your pastime for your own pleasure. Such an incarnation is always meant for the protection and improvement of the universe. This is starting another section, this prayer. So I'm not going to dive into it. We'll save it for tomorrow night. But it's something we mentioned Monday, and that is Lord Nrisingadev, even aside from Vaishnavas, Lord Nrisingadev is appreciated as one who gives protection. He comes for that purpose. Protection and improvement of the universe. That is, by his presence, transcendence, the influence of his transcendental potency is felt and brings things up. So from time to time, yada yada hi dharma shaglani, when there is discrepancy in dharma, he appears to bring things up, set things straight. So he's explaining now the purpose of the Lord's appearance. First is it's the warm-up for making the prayers, and now he's appreciating Lord Nrisingadev's appearing in this world. He's protecting Prahlad, but he's not saying, you came to protect me. You came for the protection and the betterment, the upliftment of the whole universe. Prahlad's a broad thinker, although he's a small boy. He's one of our 12 great authorities, Mahajan. Little boy. Age isn't the thing, which is not a material qualification. Devotion is the qualification. So, see if there's any comments or discussion. Sorry for that little noise at the beginning about the kids, but it was a little... Forgive me. I've been in situations when trying to speak and it goes on and goes on and goes on. I thought better to like do it at the beginning rather than later. I wasn't sure I did the right thing, but that's... Okay, so any discussion? Yes. Oh. Okay.
No, it's just one question.
This morning class. Okay. Give a little background for the people that weren't there for the morning class. Yeah. He wanted not just information, but he wanted the connection with the personality of Godhead, because the world, how we view the world around us has a significant effect on how we view ourselves. And he wanted to hear from the realized Maitreya, not the information and another recitation of the information, but you know, the mood and the realization of Maitreya about... Yes. Devotion level.
To the devotion level. So whatever the block is our material tendencies, so those material tendencies can be cleared out by chanting, hearing.
Yes.
So is that I need to have an intention for that?
Yes.
By doing that, it gets...
Well, it's both. It's not a mechanical process. Hearing and chanting is not a mechanical process. It's not a vending machine. Put in your coins, pull the thing, and down comes, you know, sincerity. It's something with intention we need to cultivate. Well, at least, you know, at least through purification, the intention should evolve, and good teachers will help you under, just as your question is presenting, do I need a good intention? You need a clear yes. But that's not, the initial intention is from Bhagavad Gita. Four types of pious people render devotional service unto me. I want. And then it has to go beyond the I want. It has to go beyond what does Krishna want. So we have to reset the compass. And you don't reset the compass, you're not going to get to the destination. It's like a GPS, recalculating. Keep doing it. How many times? As many times till you reach the goal. Let's get real practical. The first time you read Bhagavad Gita, how much of what you read in Bhagavad Gita did you understand? A little bit. And then you went back and read some more. Wow, there's all that stuff I didn't see this the first time I read it. Then you go back and read it again. It's part of it is Krishna's ever fresh, but part of it is we're covered and we're becoming less covered. And as we become less covered, we can understand better. Even including in what the intention should be, what the goal is. The concept of what the goal is will be refined as you go closer to the goal. You may not articulate it any differently, but your realization of it becomes clearer. The intention becomes clearer. But just the mechanical Bahu Janma Kari Yadi Shravana Kirtana, that verse from Adi Lila chapter 8, one can go on chanting the holy name for many, many lifetimes and not get the goal. So do you need the intention? Put in your GPS. I don't know what the goal is. Good luck. Yes. How do you deal with it? Purify it. Envy has a root. And the envy is envy towards Krishna. There's two places that you can read in Bhagavad Gita. Vitaraga Bhaya Krodha. Krishna says one has to overcome those three. So, envy that somebody has something I wish I had is really envy of Krishna, because that something that somebody else has that you don't have came from Krishna, who has what you don't have. We're just not so Krishna conscious, but it's the byproduct of envy of Krishna. It's what brings us to the material world. Dvandva Mohina Bharata Vita Ragavaya Krodha. So, so how to deal with it? Purify it. And that is, just like this expression that Prabhupada said, it starts with Krishna, and Krishna is very great, and I'm very tiny, and I have envy, and I have another shortcomings, long list. Therefore, I need to get purification. I need to present myself before Krishna, because he's the supreme pure. I need his association and the association of those who are associated with him. The problem, if I'm envious, I may be envious, just, you know, jack up my envy to Krishna and his devotees. So I have to be on guard against it. Knowing that it's there, I have to be on guard against it. So instead of, you do something that's the antidote to that something, if there's some shortcoming. You consciously, make a conscious effort to offer something to Krishna without any expectation. You know, very practical. You cook. So, consciously, when you're making the preparing, and it goes far back as even buying the vegetables and grains, etc. But when you're making the offering, my dear Lord Krishna, this is for you. And so, it's taking a strong stance on the envy. It's not for your tongue, nor is it for members of your family. It's for Krishna. Now, conditioning is, it's certainly for my family. Otherwise, it wouldn't be in the kitchen. But it's for ultimately it's for Krishna. And the more that, so it's something that you do every day already, that it's for Krishna. And then you take it back steps. You know, how clean the kitchen is because it's for Krishna. And when you wash the vegetables, it's for Krishna. When you buy the vegetables, it's for Krishna. You want the best, not just because I know that my husband likes this one and my son likes that one. But it's for Krishna. I want the best because it's for Krishna. And then you have a job. So I'm earning this money because it's meant for service to Krishna. It's just little steps, but you know, take something that you do every day. A practical suggestion is make the offerings with Krishna, please accept. Although in my heart, I don't have that deep-seated feeling. Somewhere it's in there, but you know, I'm not feeling that feeling. I'm feeling I'm taking care of my kids and my husband. That's my feeling. And I want this to be a feeling for you. There's one Sunday school teacher, really gifted Sunday school teacher, who shared in a public forum like this, I struggle a lot cooking for Krishna. Because my whole life I've been cooking for my family. My kids are in college and stuff like that. So, you know, but I know I have to cook for Krishna. But I've been doing this for so long, it's like hard to transition. So it's not envy of Krishna, but it's not bhakti to Krishna either. It's being dutiful, but go beyond being dutiful. It's good to be dutiful. Be devoted to Krishna, that makes the heart pure. And devotion to Krishna takes care of the envy. And then it's gone. You won't find it anymore. You look for it. Devotion to Krishna. It's the cure for that disease, dvesha. Raga dvesha samutena dvandva mohena bharata. How are we doing? Any other? Yes. Yes.
There's a question from online.
From online, really? Okay, go ahead.
Thank you for such an enlightening class. I really appreciate your point about how pious deeds plus an impure mind equals pride. And also your counterpoint on how we should give up our pride and accept whatever our circumstance with the mood that Krishna should be pleased. I have heard it mentioned before that pride is one anartha that we have that Krishna doesn't purify us of. I was told we have to do this ourselves. I was wondering if you could go more into detail about these points. Thank you so much.
Well, I haven't heard it quite like that. There, when it goes, what I have heard goes like this. Krishna, in his killing of the demons of Vrindavan, this is Bhaktivinod and Bhaktisiddhanta, it's an indication of Krishna's willingness. It's a pastime of Krishna's helping us overcome obstacles on the path of bhakti. But there are two demons that Balaram killed, that Krishna killed. So Dainakasura. So, and Pralambasura. So I can't remember for certain, my memory isn't totally sharp on this, but something like Pralambasura is in this category, and so we need to make some effort, and the spiritual strength we need to make such an effort comes from Balaram. To do anything in devotional service, we need spiritual strength. And spiritual strength comes from Balaram. So Balaram will help us overcome pride. But you know, pride, same as envy. It comes, the purifier of anything that's dark is light. Purifier of anything that's contaminated is bhakti. So we have to increase bhakti instead of doing something for getting something and being proud of that something that we get or that I achieved it or something like that. To leave that to the side with spiritual strength, just make the effort that Krishna should be pleased. So I don't know if that answers the person's question, but they're not here to tell me if the question got answered. Because sometimes people have a specific thing in mind and I'm not sure I always understand what they have in their mind. Anything else? Yeah. Yeah.
But he was not able to
specify. Not able to do what? Yes, he wasn't.
What is the equation?
What's the reason?
Yeah.
Huh, it's easy. He wanted Prahlad to offer him prayers. He wanted that reciprocation of love with Prahlad. Until that happened, he just... he wanted. Because the love of Prahlad is super excellent. Even beyond the quality of the love of Brahma. Prahlad is a Vaikunthavasi and Brahma's, you know, posted in the material world. He's the head of a sampradaya. He's also one of the great Mahajans. But he has special affection for Prahlad. He wanted to hear Prahlad. He wanted Prahlad to reveal truths about him that, in a way that Prahlad can do. So, for our benefit. Are we done? Okay. Yeah, we're done. So I just